Accession number 33250, Reel 14.
He also incidentally recognised China, communist China. Two things which upset the Americans. First, that he was buying Russian communist arms, admittedly from Czechoslovakia, and second, that he'd gone and recognised China, which had the Senate, the American Senate, baying for blood. So the Americans said, well, that's too bad. We can't finance this dam if you're going to spend the money on Russian arms. Nasser then announced that in that case he would nationalise the Suez Canal and apply the dues, the money that he would get from that, instead of the money that the Americans and we had said we would supply and now said we wouldn't. So, I mean, that was the way the row developed. And then there was a great business about what was to be done about all this, and Nasser, having announced that he nationalised the canal, we had meeting after meeting in London about what was to be done about it. Eden said, "Well, you can't let him get away with this. We're back in the sort of 1930s situation. You let a dictator, you give him an inch and he'll take an L. We've got to stop this one right now." The Americans were far less keen to embark on that sort of thing, but they didn't really just come out and say no. On the contrary, John Foster Dulles, the Secretary of State, said, "Well, we should set up a Suez Canal Users Association and ensure that the dues for ships passing through the canal are paid to the Users Association, not to the Egyptian government." How was that going to be affected? Well, you would have a warship at each end of the canal and you collect the dues. When it came to the point it appeared that the American position was that you could not use force to collect the dues in this way. So by this time Eden was fed up with being thwarted at every turn, really, and decided that if the Americans wouldn't play, he'd go it alone, or rather, he'd go it with the French and the Israelis, who were very willing to participate in a in an exercise to grab the canal. This was all this all had to be done in total secrecy, and a mere handful, I mean three or four people in the British government knew about it, the rest didn't. And well, my personal experience of it. I was on the Egypt desk. I was concerned with this particular problem and any other particular problem in Egypt, but this one was occupying my time. And at about 11 o'clock in the morning, I got a piece of paper which gave the statement that Eden intended to make in the House of Commons that afternoon at 2:30 or whenever. And I looked at this and I laughed for a moment and I said, this is one of those office jokes, you know, people do produce things like that and send them round for a laugh. And I went in to see the head of the department, who was sitting at his desk with a face like a thundercloud, and I said, have you seen this thing? I think this is one of old so-and-so's jokes, isn't it? And he said, no, it is not a joke. You know, I said, you mean that he actually is going to stand up in the House of Commons and say that we're going to have to interpose our forces? You know, yes, he said. He'd only just heard of it too, you know. So there you are, the people who were allegedly concerned with Egypt were kept carefully in the dark, and so was everybody, and any report that this was some sort of agreement scheme which had been cooked up with the French and Israelis was strongly denied and continued to be denied for ages afterwards. Well, they were the Eden was determined to invade and do the thing, and the difficulty was, well, one difficulty, there were endless difficulties. One difficulty was that it was going to take 10 days or more to get this force out to Egypt. And what did he suppose was going to happen while this convoy proceeded at a stately pace across the Mediterranean? What were the Americans going to say about it? Well, what Eisenhower said about it was very cross and furious indeed. He had an election pending. He was about to go to the country for another term of office. He didn't want things like this just before an election. So he said no firmly, and then again, one of the things that we had to do if we were going to invade Egypt was to take out the Egyptian Air Force. This was done with great efficiency, but it was done a week before the ships arrived. You know, I mean, it was poor timing. The whole world was alerted. I mean, the Canadians were very cross. Everybody was, a lot of people were very cross, and the Americans made noises about the pound, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer was very worried about what would be the economic effects of this thing. And but anyway, there it was. He went ahead. As a military operation, it was a tolerable success, but it was stopped when we were halfway down the canal. We'd have been at the far end of the canal in another day or so, and no doubt there was nobody there, able to stop us, except the Americans, the Canadians, the United Nations, and everybody said no. And Eden was halted by the threat to the pound, to the economy, to everybody. I mean, he could not win. Again, you see, rather like Iraq, what he supposed was going to happen if he had succeeded was never really clearly stated. What were we going to do? Reoccupy Egypt? People said, oh, well, of course, Nasser will fall and we'll have a new government to deal with, and then things will be different. But Nasser didn't fall, and might not have fallen even if we had continued. You know, meanwhile, the Arab world were furious the Israelis were involved in this. That did lasting damage to our relations with the Arab world. The consequences are still there today, in a sort of fundamental distrust, a fundamental feeling that when the chips are down, we're not on their side. So, I mean, we have come out of this impossible situation far better than I, or I guess anybody, expected could be at the time. I mean, it's incredible. Here we are. 60 years later, 55 years later, and we have tolerably good relations with many Arab countries, but there is one fundamental truth which can't, I think, be altered. That is that our policy towards Israel and Palestine is not acceptable to the Arab world, to anybody in the Arab world, and can't be made so. We live with this. It's like Napoleon, who said, "The Spanish ulcer ruined me." Well, we could say the Palestine ulcer has ruined our relations with the Arab world. Any time that there is trouble in the Arab world, we get blamed for it. We get the thick end of the stick. It's something we just have to live with. The only people really who were ever in a position to call the Israelis off, to say, look, no more building, no more this, no more that, Eisenhower was the only one who ever did it. He said they would either get out of Sinai or face the consequences, and they got out of Sinai. Nobody has ever taken a firm line with them since then. And the building, expansion, the continued spreading in out from Jerusalem and into the it continues into the settlements. Continue to be. Occasionally, the Israelis agree to a moratorium. We won't build any more for 6 months. We won't build any more for 9 months while we see if we can negotiate something. But then, as they can't negotiate something, they can't get the Arabs to agree to it. Then they go back to building again.
Yeah.